This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Good morning. It's time for this week's broadcast of Worcester Magazine, your local connection to the news, views, and events happening in Worcester. Today we will be reading from the May 22nd edition. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm Catherine Thornton, reading with Julie Sandrovich. We'll start off with first-person column. Joe Fusco Jr. travels in time with a 17-year-old rant. Sometimes I use cotton swabs to clean my inner ear. I jab so deep that the tip sticks out my other ear, confirming my father's 40-year-old theory of what exists inside my size 8 melon. Sometimes I let my kids play on a trampoline. The 7 of them range in age from 29 to 10. I encourage the oldest to jump high, even though she's afraid of heights. I dare the twins to land on each other while they're holding up my grandchildren. I instruct the youngest to aim for the metal springs on his descent. Sometimes when making cookies, I eat raw dough and encourage others to follow suit. It complements the raw egg I crack on the Rocky style into my beverage. I also order my cheeseburgers blood rare with the cheddar unmelted. The waitress calls me her Uncle Che Guevara. Sometimes I climb to the top step of a ladder. It's ideal for pacing before an important business meeting or learning a new dance routine. I've tried the steps below it, but they just not as inspirational. Sometimes I have a beer while using a power tool or a piece of machinery. I find the snowblower quite efficient with a couple of Bud Lights under my belt in July. I've also made lovely figure sevens with the hedge trimmer with a Corona in January. Let's face it, I'm a 54-year-old rebel without a pause. I don't fasten my seatbelt when I move cars in our driveway, take showers sans rubber mat, change batteries in the smoke alarm, and carbon monoxide detectors only when they beep like the Roadrunner, clean the lint trap in the dryer and the lint in my belly button simultaneously. Risky behavior is my life choice. It's snowing outside, and I'm not wearing sunscreen. Deal with it. Next up is an article by Margaret Smith, Cat Show to Bring Furry and Fabulous to Gardner. It's a time for the fancy and fluffy of felines to look absolutely fabulous, as the Long Hair Feline Club, an affiliated of the Cat Fanciers Federation, hosts a cat show billed as an out-of-this-world cat show experience, May 23rd and 24th at the Acadian Social Club in Gardner. So the show is hosted by the Cat Fanciers Federation, which is one of the three main organizations you can register your cats with, said Ken Staples, a press contact for the show and breeder of Ragdolls, a fluffy, relaxed breed known for its easygoing nature, blue eyes, and color points on its coat. Staples has been breeding Ragdolls for about 25 years. Of every stripe and spot, Staples said, when people go to the show, they're going for two reasons, titles and points for each that you get, and also go for year-end parade of perfection for the top 20 nationals for the entire year. Although hosted by the Long Hair Feline Club, cats of all breeds are welcome. Spectators can expect to see a variety of cat breeds with a large number of Maine Coon cats, Staples said. The Maine Coon cat is a large domesticated breed with its roots in North America. With their hardy bone structure, long fur, and amiable disposition, they've grown in popularity in the U.S. and around the world. Maine Coons and Ragdolls are the most popular breeds right now. You can make a whole day of it. There will be four demonstration rings set up around the interior of the room and a benching area in the middle with rows of cats waited to be called up to the rings. Staples said, spectators can visit the cats on exhibit but should ask before touching or petting any cat. The cat show is an opportunity to learn about different breeds and their history. There will be a raffle, vendors with cat-related items, and lunch available for sale, as well as an out-of-this-world award for categories such as nicest and most helpful humans. Staples believes the cat show will provide an affordable day for families. You can make a whole day out of it. It's very reasonably priced, said Staples, noting the $20 cap. Staples noted the accredited breeding organizations have ethical codes to which all members must adhere. You must be a cat breeder. You have to follow the code of ethics for that organization. The cats must be healthy. You must provide paperwork that is requested, Staples said. He added, we have a minimum amount of time in between litters. The Cat Fanciers Federation Feline Show is set for 10 a.m., 4 p.m., 3rd and 24th at the Acadian Social Club on Parker Street in Gardner. Admission is $6 for adults and $3 for seniors 50 and older, children 6 to 12, with a $20 cap per family. Coming up soon, All That Remains, to play at the Palladium by Meg Trucolo. In the 1990s, long before Springfield metal band All That Remains got together, lead singer Phil Labonte would make the hour-long drive east to Worcester to see shows at the Palladium. The Palladium, for a long time, was the only place where you could get a lot of types of bands to listen to, Labonte said. It's a long drive to go downtown to New York to catch a show, so when they would end up hitting the Palladium, we would go see a ton of bands. I saw Linkin Park, I saw Emperor, I saw Arch Enemy. I've seen so many bands that made such a massive impact on me, so that's the staple venue in my career. In the decades since, All That Remains has played the Palladium several times in several ways, from the main stage to the Palladium upstairs, as openers, as headliners, and they will return once again as the main event on May 23rd. A Song Catches Fire. They will be joined by special guests Born of Osiris and Dead Eyes. There are six more bands on the bill: Led to Believe, Infinity Sequence, 656, Take the Flame, Cryptosporidium, and Among Ghosts. Doors will open at 5 p.m. and the music will start at 5:30. The band's current tour is the first time fans see them play material from their most recent album, Anti-Fragile, which they released more than a year ago in early 2025, and Labonte said the new material is going well in a live setting. The kids are really moving around. People know the words and sing along. All the things you would hope for a reaction to a song we're getting. The band's previous album before Anti-Fragile came out in 2018, and Labonte said with several lineup changes in 7 years, including the death of guitarist Ollie Herbert, he and his bandmates wanted to make a record that All That Remains fans would like. Some people might say that's a very broad thing because in our 25-year career, we've done a lot of different styles of stuff. We've covered a lot of ground and not let ourselves get pigeonholed into one style. This record is one for the core All That Remains fans to put our stamp back on, that 2000s metalcore title, and say we're still the same band. Still a ton of people coming to the shows. In late summer 2024, All That Remains joined Mudvayne and Megadeth on tour, playing a handful of singles that would later come out on Anti-Fragile as part of their opening set, and their current tour is the first time they have hit the road since. We put the record out, and things didn't line up the way we wanted to with touring and other projects we had going, so unfortunately we didn't get to go out, Labonte said. There's still a ton of people coming to the shows and an appetite to hear us play. It's really humbling, to be honest, to be so selective with what we do. And then when we go out on tour, people are still coming out. On the current 18-day U.S. tour, the band's headlining set contains a few songs from Anti-Fragile, including the album Cut Their Tongues Out, among a range of songs from almost every album they've released in a career that has lasted more than 25 years. We're playing for over an hour. We want to make sure that the songs people really want to hear, we're playing. The people that keep showing up over and over, those are the people who make it so we can do this. And we want them to walk away feeling they got what they came for. Above all, Labonte said it's a thrill to return to the Palladium, where he so often watched from the audience and now gets to see hundreds of fans from the stage. We've been playing that venue for so long that 25 years later, we still see a lot of the same people, Labonte said. They were young teens the first time they came out, and now they're adults, but they're still down in front singing along. And that's really incredible to keep coming back year after year and still see the same people coming out and supporting you. All that remains with special guest Born of Osiris and Dead Eyes, 5:30 p.m. on May 23rd at the Palladium. Tickets are $41 and up. And today's Poetry Town by Ronald C. McGillivray. Empty chairs. They sit poised but lonesome on the old porch, tilted with time. Only distant memories now occupy the chairs, rocking ever so serenely empty, fanned by phantom whiffs of seasons past. They remember when youth took the reins, riding them rough like ponies. They remember mother staring into the meadow, barely moving as she becalmed babies and peeled apples for a Sunday pie. They remember father on a slow roll, smoking his pipe, tapping the ashes out against the chair while reading the paper. Dalliance, comfort, solace, pleasure so far in these days as paint and family chip away. Now over to Julie for today's cover story, Learning, Leading, Giving Back.
You are listening to Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. And now it's time for this week's cover story, and it's a long one, so get some coffee, strap in, and get comfortable. I get to offer my voice as a student. Get to know Worcester Magazine 2026 College Volunteers of the Year, written by Stephanie Jarvis Campbell. Each year in May, Worcester Magazine highlights students from Worcester area colleges who have dedicated themselves to making their communities better. This year, the fifth in the series, features 11 students who exemplify the word volunteerism, from expanding food pantries to working with incarcerated youth and creating innovative programs. First up, Dimitri Morris from Quinsigamond Community College. Dimitri Morris may have only attended Quinsigamond Community College for a year, but while there, he worked on initiatives that will serve students for years to come. As a member of the Student Government Association, Morris helped invigorate the group after a friend encouraged him to join. Morris not only joined, but became vice president, and one of his first jobs was to annotate the Student Government Association Constitution upon request of the faculty advisor. When Morris saw that the Constitution was underdeveloped with minimal information for each section, he revamped it by creating job descriptions, processes for voting, and officer transitions, and more. As part of his vice president job, Morris helped increase campus presence regarding student government and was chair of student affairs. In addition, he was on the Policies and Procedures Council, served as the student representative for the college's Missions, Visions, and Values Committee, and worked closely with the Dean of Students. Through his involvement with these various communities, Morris volunteered at the campus food pantry and recruited other students to help, particularly during his first semester when it was uncertain whether EBT recipients would continue to receive food benefits. At community college, a lot of students need the food pantry, he said, adding, I try to increase awareness on campuses as much as I can. A business administration major, Morris chose to become involved in so many organizations, despite only being a student at Quinsigamond Community College for a year, because he wanted to make a difference. In high school, I did everything right on paper, but I left it the same as I found it. I'm only here for 1 year. I wanted to leave it better than I found it, and to prove to myself that I could do things for other people. I wanted to take it as an opportunity to reinvent myself, he said. Morris, a Grafton native, has committed to attending the University of Massachusetts at Amherst as a biochemistry major with hopes of becoming an anesthesiologist. He plans to continue volunteering on campus and hopes to also find opportunities at hospitals in that area. Next up, Zoe Callahan, Worcester State University. Zoe Callahan received her bachelor's degree from Worcester State University on May 16th and started graduate school there 2 days later, allowing her to not only advance her studies in occupational therapy, but also continue her love of serving others. Callahan has been involved with WooServe, the university's community service organization, as a four-year member, serving three of those on the executive board as secretary. One of her projects was working with Project New Hope, a support and service agency for veterans, and specifically its food pantry. During her time with WooServe, Callahan also made cards to donate to local nursing homes, helped run a canned food drive at Thanksgiving, and put together hygiene-based bags for Abby's house and school supply bags for Pernet Family Health Services, both in Worcester. As part of the executive board, she was responsible for managing many of these drives and fundraising. Callahan also was a member of the Student Occupational Therapy Club and was also able to merge her passions when WooServe partnered with the club earlier this year. The two organizations made and donated superhero capes and masks for pediatric patients at UMass Memorial Medical Center. I was really glad we got to do something like that because that's the setting I want to work in someday, said Callahan, who also played soccer for 2 years, served as its manager for one, and was on the track team for 3 years. In addition, Callahan worked with middle school students when they came to campus as part of the Lancer for a Day program and helped lead them in fun activities such as writing kindness notes and crafts. Even though Callahan is moving back home to Arlington, she will continue to participate in WooServe events when she can and will seek volunteer opportunities closer to her residence as well. We're all here to help each other, she said. If you can make a difference in someone's life, then that's what I find meaningful. Next, Julia Arena, Fitchburg State University. Moving into and furnishing a dorm room or off-campus apartment with just the essentials can be expensive. Never mind adding a personal touch with accessories. Then there is the question of what to do with it all when the school year ends. Witnessing the number of items casually thrown away, Julia Arena began a program at Fitchburg State University for students to pass on their loved but no longer needed dorm items. Arena created Give and Go as part of her duties as a presidential ambassador, a Fitchburg State University program to promote leadership. Give and Go, she said, is designed to give back to incoming students who might need that item now, that decoration you put in your dorm room that you may not need in your adult life. Since spring 2025, Give and Go has not only bettered the college campus by allowing students to donate their unwanted items to other students, but Arena also knew that eventually she'd have her own supplies that she wouldn't need anymore. Plus, she said, I always tended to see people throwing away useful things that other people could still get use out of. Also, it supports our lower income population. We have a lot of students who come here for affordability. Even though she has graduated, Give and Go will continue. This program isn't going anywhere, Arena said. And knowing that makes her feel proud. It warms my heart. It makes me feel so accomplished. It's so rewarding to have an idea and see it come to fruition. Arena can trace her desire to volunteer to her time as a Girl Scout, when her leader would tell the troop to leave it better than you found it. In Girl Scouts, that meant clean up your stuff and leave it nice for the next group, said Arena, a native of Shrewsbury. When I think about it in the connotation of my adult life and the connotation of my college life, I've lived here for 4 years. That's four of my formative years. It's almost an obligation to leave it better than I found it. In addition to being a presidential ambassador for 2 years, Arena served as a resident assistant since second term freshman year and as a lead RA most recently. An exercise sports science major, she also was a finalist for the university's Antonucci Student Leadership Award, given in honor of President Emeritus Robert V. Antonucci. Now she will head to Emerson Hospital in Concord, New Hampshire, to work as a medical student in the cardiology department with a goal of getting a master's degree to be a physician assistant. Next up, Brielle Berube, Assumption University. Brielle Berube joined Assumption University's chapter of Habitat for Humanity as a freshman and quickly stepped into a leadership role as president, a position she will continue as she prepares to enter her senior year as a marketing graphic design and accounting major. Joining Habitat when she first came to Assumption was serendipitous, Berube said, recalling that it wasn't until she attended an activities fair that she learned about the organization. By sophomore year, she was working on marketing campaigns for the group. Then, during the spring semester, she stepped in as president when the student holding that position left the university. She was officially elected junior year and will continue serving that role as a senior, as well as the group's social media manager. Part of that work is volunteering at the Habitat Restore, which uses proceeds from sales of used furniture and building materials to construct affordable homes and participating in house builds in the area. This year, the Assumption Group did a lot of site cleanup so that construction could continue in a timely manner. Members also have opportunities to engage in hands-on work. Last year, I actually got to pour concrete, which is pretty cool, Berube said. Habitat is not just about building houses, though, she pointed out. Members from the Assumption Club also have made appreciation cards for campus food service workers and holiday cards for nursing home residents, created paper flowers to show thankfulness for people in their lives, designed friendship bracelets for kindergarten students, and planned a trivia game to spread awareness about Habitat's mission and work. A native of Amherst, New Hampshire, Berube is also captain of the outdoor club and the women's weightlifting club, was involved with the SOFIA, that sophomore initiative at Assumption program, and is a mentee with Aspire, alumni student partnerships in reflective engagement. Volunteering has been so important, she said, because it has allowed her to spend her time being productive, meeting others who share her interests, and helping to build community on campus of people who want to help others. She added, I like to put in 100% to everything I do. I've grown so much from all these experiences. Getting involved has been really important to my personal growth. Next, Ivy Ballou, Anna Maria College. Throughout her time at Anna Maria College, Ivy Ballou was highly involved in various organizations, from holding leadership positions in service groups to forming her own club when she recognized it could benefit other students. Ballou officially graduated with honors last December with a degree in liberal studies and a minor in education, but returned to participate in commencement on May 9th. Throughout her time at Anna Maria, she immersed herself in a variety of activities, including serving as vice president of the Program and Activities Club and secretary of the Student Government Association, Art and Wellness Club, and the Pride Club. An organization leader for 3 years, Ballou also was a peer mentor and an academic coach and writing tutor. I've always been someone who has done random acts of service, said Ballou, noting that when she was younger, she volunteered with numerous organizations. In college, I knew it would be a really good opportunity to do a lot of volunteering. She did just that, also serving as secretary of AmCares, a campus organization focusing on volunteerism. As part of that group, she helped make care packages for the homeless in the Mustard Seed, a Worcester food pantry and soup kitchen, and participated in seasonal cleanups on campus, as well as countless other activities. We volunteered any way we could, said Ballou, who grew up in Douglas and now lives in Charlton. When she was a freshman, Ballou joined the newly formed Students Against Sexual Violence Club and served as co-president, vice president, and president over the years. In 2025, the group was honored with the college's Organization of the Year Award. One of Ballou's most important roles at Anna Maria was creating the Mental Health Awareness Club and serving as its president. Mental health is something I've always dealt with, she said. I know how beneficial it is knowing how to help yourself. Although the college had a counseling center, the club was designed to provide a more comfortable way for students to talk, as well as break the stigma regarding mental health, Ballou said. As a member of the Anna Maria lacrosse team, Ballou also participated in a number of service activities with that group. She volunteered at the Special Olympics, read to students at Paxton Center School, and also donned the AMCAT mascot costume for college orientation and other special events. Ballou is now working as a substitute teacher and plans to eventually obtain a master's degree with hopes of working with children in a special education setting. Although she does not have a definite time frame, she does know that she will continue volunteering. I just love helping people and making people smile and doing the things that are beneficial, Ballou said. I feel like volunteering is a lot easier when you have a community to do it with you. Next, we have Elsabet Franklin, Clark University. Elsabet Franklin became involved in a mentoring and tutoring program for incarcerated youth as a part of a college class and was so captured by its mission that she decided to continue volunteering even after the course ended. A Spanish and sociology double major at Clark University, Franklin enrolled in the Teaching Behind Bars seminar, during which students partnered with the Petey Green program, founded in 2008, to help those currently and formerly incarcerated. With her group, Franklin traveled to a detention facility in Westboro to work with youth between 16 and 21. For the fall semester class, the group of students traveled to the facility once a week. After the course ended, the students continued to work with the students. That just goes to show how touching and impactful that experience was for us, said Franklin, who herself volunteered 4 hours a week during the spring. Not only was the course important for the Clark students, but Franklin said she felt it helped the youth to have meaningful relationships with people outside of the facility. I think as much as they don't want to show it, they're glad to have us, she said. It's hard to see them in that space. Several times I've gone in and said, how are you? And they say, I'm in jail. They think about it all the time, every day. My role is to be there for them as a person to talk to, just to be a friend. Franklin will head home to Brooklyn, New York for the summer before returning to Clark for a fifth year to obtain a master's in community development and planning. I definitely want to continue doing some type of work with youth who are incarcerated, she said. This summer, Franklin will also travel to Ecuador, returning to a place she visited during the spring of junior year as part of the Pachasana Study Abroad program. Although not a Clark program, she was able to receive college credits for her work with indigenous people in the Amazon rainforest. The experience allowed her to reshape and rethink the way I think about community, Franklin said, adding, the community aspect of it really spoke to me. It was very much a life-changing experience for me. Also, I kind of wanted to be uncomfortable in the best way possible. Also at Clark, Franklin participated in Difficult Dialogues, a series to facilitate discussion on race relationships on campus and other topics. It's been another eye-opening experience in one of the strongest communities I've had while at Clark, she said. Whether she's in New York, Worcester, Ecuador, or somewhere else entirely, Franklin wants to continue exploring those concepts of community while sharing her resources with others. Part of my why is recognizing the privilege I have, she said. I have the time. I have the space. I really value building relationships with people from all different backgrounds. And next, Olivia Smith, Nichols College. For Olivia Smith, college meant not only learning more about her chosen field of study, but also finding her faith, serving her community, and inspiring the next group of women student athletes. When Smith first arrived at Nichols after spending her youth in Leominster and Fitchburg, she had no experience with church. It wasn't until junior year that she joined Common Ground, the Nichols Christian Bible Study Group, but it made a profound impact on her. When she went to her first meeting, after encouragement from a friend who was a member, only about 6 people were in attendance, and that included the Reverend, she recalled. But she kept going every Thursday night, and eventually loved it so much that she began telling her teammates and classmates about the group. It's grown significantly just by word of mouth. We were able to do a lot of community events, said Smith, who attends Life Church of Massachusetts in Fitchburg and is planning to travel to Brazil for a mission trip this August. It's helped me grow. I think it's also helped other students find their niche. It gave me a lot of opportunities. I don't think I'd be the person I'd be today, serving at my church without the club. In addition to being an active member of Common Group, Smith was an orientation leader last summer and fall for incoming freshmen, which was one of my favorite times I've experienced at Nichols, she said. As part of the school-wide Bison Give Back Day, Smith participated in a community outreach project that raised more than $600 for Friendly House in Worcester, which used the money to purchase backpack supplies. She also was a member of the Senior Advisory Council, for which she was selected by faculty vote. It was very honorable to be a part of it because it meant that my voice mattered, said Smith, who was a sport marketing and content creation major. One of Smith's other passions is basketball. She was a starter for the Nichols women's basketball team for 4 years, which was a huge role as a freshman walking in there, but also very humbling, she said. She broke 2 school records, most 3-pointers in a game, and most field goals ever in a season, and reached her 1,000th point during senior year. Off campus, Smith began coaching for Synergy, an AAU high school girls basketball program, 2 years ago, and continues to do so. For her, basketball is more than just playing and practices. It's also life skills. I really want to make an impact on them, she said, of the players, not just because I'm a basketball player, but because I'm a woman myself. When I coach, it's bigger than basketball for me. And next, we have Marianne Makosa, Cumming School of Veterinary Medicine at Tufts University. For Marianne Makosa, caring for animals is beyond just being a vet. It is working with local communities in more ways than one. Although she can trace her desire to work with animals to her childhood, which was spent raising seeing eye dogs with her family, it was during the massive Ebola outbreak of seeing vets involved in a community practice and vets as scientists that really piqued her interest in the field. It was so prevalent then. You'd see these images of people in these great white suits walking around in Africa, she recalled, adding that it was one of the first times she became aware of the role that vets play as leaders in the community. Last November, when the federal government shut down, nearly eliminated EBT food benefits for recipients, Makosa was part of a coalition to expand campus pantry services. We had heard from members of our community who were afraid of what it would mean for themselves and their families if benefits were frozen, she said. Although the campus did have a pantry, it was tucked away, Makosa said. The group worked with the administration to distribute a campus-wide survey to determine students' needs and held a food drive during the holidays and ultimately created a more permanent avenue for this campus pantry to exist, she said. The drive was so successful that the coalition was able to send extra donations to Tufts at Tech Community Veterinary Clinic in Worcester, where many clients are in need, Makosa said. Tufts at Tech, a collaboration between the Cumming School and Worcester Technical High School, will now have a permanent pantry, which is just one of many ways that vets can help clients. We don't just read lab values. We don't just read blood tests, she said. By treating animals, they treat the families by extension. We take an oath to relieve suffering, and for me, that's part of it. Another one of her initiatives to bridge gaps in community care is providing written discharge instructions and general care information in Spanish at the Tufts ER and also at Tufts at Tech. I am not a native speaker, but I grew up seeing its importance and seeing the struggle of folks around me who don't come from a native English-speaking background, said Makosa, who is from New Jersey and has been learning Spanish since she was six. Providing translations is another way of reaching folks where they are and reaching across the divide and making clients feel comfortable, she said. During her third year at Tufts, Makosa and another student hosted a monthly podcast called Breaking Barriers, which had guest veterinarians to discuss communication barriers in the field, public misconceptions, and more. She also led a weekly running club for 3 years for students and faculty and running clinics in an effort to strengthen campus community involvement, she said. It has been really cool to cultivate this connection outside of just being a student. After recently receiving her Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degree, Makosa will head to New York for a 1-year internship. She then intends to pursue a residency in anesthesia after that, all while continuing to forge community connections. I view myself as a partner in communities, she said. I think partnership is more important than leadership. Community collaboration is a conversation. And next we have Jackson Nguyen, Worcester Polytechnic Institute. While a pre-med student at WPI, Jackson Nguyen made his mission to spread awareness about Alzheimer's and dementia through volunteer work in a podcast. Now, as a December 2025 graduate, he is continuing his advocacy efforts. Nguyen has been volunteering with Christopher House, a rehabilitation facility and long-term care center in Worcester, since he was a sophomore. It began simply just me wanting to give back to my community, he said. That turned into volunteering about 4 to 5 hours on weekends, planning and leading activities, and spending time with the residents, particularly those who have Alzheimer's and dementia. Through those experiences, I wanted to be more involved, said Nguyen, who emigrated from Vietnam at 7 and lived in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Nguyen was ultimately able to tie his volunteer work into his interactive qualifying project, a major part of WPI's project-based curriculum that tasks students with finding solutions to problems relating to science and society. Because he had already been working closely with the dementia program manager at Christopher House to make activities more engaging and interactive for the residents, Nguyen expanded that vision and conducted a 6-month study interviewing dementia experts in the U.S., the United Kingdom, Australia, and other countries on sensory intervention and stimulation for patients. These approaches, he said, can be very powerful in helping patients invoke memories, improve agitation, and reduce sleep deprivation. What resulted was a multi-sensory room for dementia and Alzheimer's patients that is under construction at Christopher House. I think the residents are really going to love it, Nguyen said. I'm excited to see the construction of this room. I think it's going to take it to the next level. In addition to volunteering at Christopher House, Nguyen is the community representative for the Massachusetts, New Hampshire chapter of the Alzheimer's Association, which he began in January 2025. Through his involvement, he speaks at different organizations, such as Rotary Clubs and Senior Centers, about Alzheimer's and dementia, and especially enjoys the firsthand connections with these families that have been personally affected by these conditions, he said. Last fall, he participated in the Walk to End Alzheimer's for the first time. It was incredible to see the whole community of Worcester come together, and it gives me hope that one day there will be a world without Alzheimer's, he said. A former volunteer for the WPI Emergency Medical Services, Nguyen works as a patient care assistant at UMass Memorial Hospital and is host of the Memories Podcast, in conversation with global experts on research, care, and advocacy of Alzheimer's and dementia. He described it as one of the most meaningful things I've done, adding, I'm really grateful to be able to use my platform to expand and amplify my reach. He took a short hiatus from the podcast while he was studying for his medical college admissions exam, but hopes to start again soon. After walking in May commencement exercises, he plans to take a gap year before attending medical school with hopes of becoming a neurologist. Wherever he goes, he said, I'm grateful to be able to have an impact on people living with Alzheimer's and hope to continue it as long as I can. It's important for me to give back, especially to such important causes. I want those affected to know they're not alone, he added. I ultimately want to be a light and transform this narrative. How we frame this narrative is very important. If we learn how to communicate and empower them and live a life with purpose, I think that's key. Next up, we have Akanksha Nagarkar, UMass Chan Medical School. As an undergraduate student, Akanksha Nagarkar created a nonprofit focusing on food and health that she brought with her to the T.H. Chan School of Medicine, a program that will continue not only there once she leaves, but one she also plans to bring with her to residency in New York. In 2018, when Nagarkar was a sophomore at UMass Amherst studying biology and anthropology, she and a friend founded MEAL, My Education, Action, and Lifestyle, a program to highlight the importance of nutrition and food. I grew up in a place that had a lot of food insecurity, said Nagarkar, who spent her youth in Leominster. I remember sharing my lunch with people, and I wanted to give back. Another eye-opener, she said, was seeing how much food can be wasted on college campuses. Nagarkar brought the program to T.H. Chan School of Medicine, part of UMass Chan Medical School, where 8 medical students are involved with MEAL. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the organization worked with Neighbor to Neighbor to distribute food biweekly. Since then, MEAL focuses on providing outreach to high schools and often works with the area's immigrant population, particularly on how to cook certain vegetables and creating recipe cards. Through a partnership with Holyoke High School North Campus, MEAL provides nutrition workshops to students there. Several years ago, Nagarkar was awarded a grant from the Remillard Family Community Service Fund, established to support unique projects at UMass Chan Medical School, which helped purchase exercise equipment such as pickleball paddles and yoga mats for students at Holyoke High School. For 2 years, beginning in September 2021, Nagarkar was project leader for the Barbershop Health Network, working primarily with Ministerios de la Trinidad, a predominantly Spanish-speaking church in Worcester. The organization hosted workshops, held COVID and flu vaccine clinics, gave presentations on vaccine hesitancy, and provided blood pressure and glucose screenings. In addition, she previously served as coordinator for the Worcester Free Clinics at the Indian Society of Worcester, where she managed day-to-day operations and saw patients. As a medical student, you learn so much, and I feel good to put that medical knowledge to use, Nagarkar said. Last June, Nagarkar completed a fellowship at the National Cancer Institute, Division of Cancer Epidemiology and Genetics in Bethesda, Maryland. During the year-long program, she led a research project on racial disparities in oncology. During her time at Chan, Nagar Kaur also worked as a member of the Gold Humanism Honor Society. Members work on community projects, and Nagar Kaur created the Allyship in Medicine training to help students and residents address microaggression and discrimination in clinical settings. This curriculum is part of the official UMass Chan coursework, she said. Nagar Kaur will graduate with a doctor in medicine on May 31st, and after that, she will head to New York University Grossman School of Medicine as an internal medicine resident physician. My goal is to continue to do health disparities research, she said, adding that she plans to bring Meal with her. The program will also continue at Chan. I think one of the best things is seeing other people, my peers and colleagues, feel empowered and to see the problems, Nagar Kaur said. I love teaching and I love mentoring, and having an organization like this is a big part of that. And last but not least, we have Angel Collazo from College of the Holy Cross. Angel Collazo originally entered Holy Cross with plans of becoming a psychiatrist, but after taking a biology course, he decided to switch his career path. That single choice led to a series of connections that would ultimately change his life trajectory and help him discover his passion for making a difference. A psychology and Spanish double major, Collazo enrolled in a community-based learning class, which offers students an opportunity to take classroom knowledge and transfer it to real-world engagement. Through the class, he connected with Hector Reyes House, a residential substance use treatment facility for Latino men in Worcester. As he himself is from Puerto Rico, he moved from there at 7 to Springfield, where his mom has family. It was a great way to connect to his heritage, he said. Collazo would eventually meet Karen Riley McNary, who was program director at the time for Hector Reyes House, and they realized they had a connection. Collazo had been living with his mother in a domestic violence shelter until she received an apartment voucher. Those vouchers were distributed to women in shelters through efforts from a task force then-Governor Charlie Baker had formed to focus on women in domestic violence situations, the same committee that Riley McNary had been involved with. Collazo continued to volunteer at Hector Reyes, learning more about the nonprofit world, and he found he enjoyed the work being done at the house. I had an immediate human connection, and I just stayed, he said. I love to volunteer. I love working with the community. It enriches my learning. Later, Collazo began working as a part-time case manager at the house, which allowed him to understand how recovery works, he said. Collazo also has been involved with planning two fundraisers for Cafe Reyes, a training program for the men who live in Hector Reyes House, and its graduates. The first fundraiser was Cinco de Mayo celebration on May 5th, and the second was an 11-year anniversary celebration for Cafe Reyes on May 21st. COVID really impacted the way people eat food, he said, noting that between DoorDash, financial reasons, and people just not going to restaurants as much in general, the cafe has been struggling. Collazo is so passionate about the Hector Reyes House model that when he was offered a job as administrator, he accepted and began work right after his classes ended on May 4th. And all because of that one change early in his college career. I decided to go ahead and take a CBL course and just happened to meet the person who opened the doors for my family to get a house. I thought, this is real work. If it's working for my family, it can work for others. That is where the passion comes from. Maybe I can save lives in a different way, Collazo said. Hopefully, he added, after I'm done here and wherever my life takes me, I can go back to Springfield and Puerto Rico and do some change there. And that wraps up this week's cover story. Very inspiring stories from these lovely young people. Now we send you back over to Catherine for some more articles from Worcester Magazine.
Here we go with more Worcester Magazine for Friday, May 22nd, with an article by Richard Duckett. Beatles manager Brian Epstein is Midas Man in film at Worcester JCC. In 1961, Brian Epstein, who managed his family-owned music store, NEMS, in Liverpool, England, kept hearing about a local group that was getting popular and even received requests for a single it had recorded in Germany, My Bonnie. Curious, Epstein went to see the group play a lunchtime concert at the Cavern Club in Liverpool on a rainy November 9th, 1961. Epstein evidently liked what he saw and heard because, although he had no experience managing an artist or a band, he offered to become their manager. By the end of 1963, the Beatles were a household name and about to invade the United States. Epstein may have had the magic touch concerning the Beatles and other acts he went on to manage, but as the British 2024 biographical drama movie Midas Man makes clear, he had his own inner turmoil and challenges to contend with. He died at the height of the Beatles' fame in 1967 of what was determined to be an accidental overdose of barbiturates at 32. There's so much to him. I hope some of what he is comes across in the film, said Bridget Grant, who wrote the screenplay for Midas Man, which will be screened on May 31st as the final film of the 2026 Central Mass International Jewish Film Festival presented by the Worcester Jewish Community Center. The film will be shown at the Worcester JCC on Salisbury Street in Worcester. Midas Man has been well received as it makes the rounds on the Jewish Film Festival circuit in the United States. Grant has said she thought it would be powerful to tell Brian's story, to show the world this remarkable Jewish man who gave the Beatles to the world. So wonderful in the part. With that, the drama of Epstein's life gets played out as a gay Jewish man feeling that he's on the outside looking in. Epstein is portrayed by actor Jacob Fortune Lloyd in what reviewers have described as a heartfelt performance. Jacob is so wonderful in the part, Grant said while speaking on the phone from London recently. Jacob did a lot of research and really connected with him. Grant, a British journalist and editor, did plenty of research as well for what is her first movie screenplay. Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr were not available, but among the people Grant interviewed were Basil Hyman, Epstein's first cousin and since deceased, and Frida Kelly, who was Epstein's office manager. Grant, who is Jewish, said her husband is a big Beatles fan and saw them perform live when he was 11. Meanwhile, after spending so much time looking at Epstein's life, quote, I love him. It feels like he's part of my family now. We'd love to sit down with him and ask him so much. Epstein had never managed a band, but he had an instinct. He was so far ahead of his time. That includes merchandising the Beatles and managing the group's legendary tour of America. Would the Beatles have existed without him? Possibly. Would they fall out amongst themselves? After he dies, that's what happened. There was a real sadness in him. As for the man, there was a real sadness in him. Brian wrote a will when he was 23 years old. It's bizarre. It was so fatalistic. That is what made me hook into him. In an early scene in Midas Man, Epstein and his parents, Harry and Malka Queenie, played by Eddie Marson and Emily Watson, discuss his future as they sit in the pews together after services have ended at a Liverpool synagogue. Later, Epstein learns that his parents have received a call from a man who robbed him during a sexual encounter and is attempting to blackmail him. While his parents want to go to the police, Epstein insists he will pay the man off instead. While the film is set amid the rise of what has been called the swinging 60s, same-sex intimacy and relationships were illegal in England until 1967, the year Epstein died. His private life led to the instances of robbery, blackmail, and betrayal. Addressing the camera in Midas Man, he says this is what happens when you're forced by law to live in the shadows. But Midas Man is also a film about triumph. Epstein not only managed the Beatles, but also the Liverpool group Jerry and the Pacemakers, who created Don't Let the Sun Catch You Crying, and singer Cilla Black, played by Darcy Shaw, who was originally Cilla White and worked at the Cavern Club. He had a Jewish life. Epstein and the Beatles are shown being turned down by record labels until producer George Martin at EMI's Parlophone auditions them. Jay Leno plays American TV host Ed Sullivan, whose show would get 70 million viewers when the Beatles appeared on it in 1964. On the American tour, Epstein meets Tex, but the relationship brings more blackmail. Just before Epstein's death, the Beatles appear on Our World, the first global telecast, and Epstein receives lots of congratulations. The Fab Four are played by Jonah Lees, Blake Richardson, Leo Harvey Elledge, Campbell Wallace, Adam Lawrence. the original drummer from whom Epstein fires at Martin's insistence in favor of Ringo in a powerful dramatic scene. The making of Midas Man was quite a process, including three directors involved at various points, with Joe Stevenson getting the credit. Grant said the screenplay went through many revisions. It was a journey. Grant recalled that when she was writing the first draft of Midas Man, she was told, put everything in it about Epstein's life. I did. Looking back at his childhood, he was complex. His family was well known in Liverpool, and he went to a Jewish boarding school. He had a Jewish life, Grant said. He was briefly engaged to a young Jewish woman, Sonia Seligman. Her family were jewelers in Liverpool, but the relationship could not continue because of Epstein's homosexuality. None of this made it into the film, Grant said. Epstein was gay at a time when it was illegal. For the family, it was a big issue for them. Near the end of the film, Harry dies, but Queenie tells Epstein that he was proud of him. A lifelong struggle. Rumors emerged that Epstein died by suicide. However, Grant discounts that in part because there were so many positive things happening around him at the time he died, including contracts for Yellow Submarine and Cilla Black getting a TV show. Also, with Harry recently deceased, he would never have left his mother alone, Grant said. The film shows Epstein seeing a doctor. He was on uppers and downers. He would wake up thinking, I didn't take one, and it happened. A subject not mentioned in the film, and also the stuff of rumors, is a trip to Spain that Epstein and Lennon took together in 1963. Grant does not think the holiday was part of a romantic affair between the two, as some have intimated, and Lennon even seemed to hint at. I think a lot of it is who Brian was as a person, Grant said. Epstein felt paternalistic to the Beatles, so a romantic relationship would have been going too far for him. Epstein was godfather to John and Cynthia Lennon's son Julian, Grant noted. Grant said that she has so much background on Epstein, there could be a series. For all the things that are in Midas Man, she thinks the film got it right. Paul McCartney is known as a close protector of the Beatles' legacy, even if he doesn't speak directly. If there was an issue, we would have heard something, Grant said. A film with a gentle quality. She and McCartney actually live quite close by in London and go to the same bakery. I'm hoping to catch him walking out and say, can I have a word with you, she joked. I think our film has a gentle quality. I don't think any writer could love Brian as much as I do. With director Sam Mendes making films about each individual member of the Beatles to be released in 2028, Grant could see Midas Man having a long life. I'm hoping it becomes a cult favorite. Grant said she doesn't want Epstein to be seen just as a Jewish manager or a gay manager. I want him to be a real human manager. He gave their, the Beatles, music to the rest of the world. I hope they love him. The screening of Midas Man, 3 p.m. on May 31st at Worcester JCC on Salisbury Street in Worcester. The tickets are $10 in advance, $15 at the door. The Listen Up column is written by Meg Trigolo, triple play from Gio Petrella. How long does it take after an album for an artist to start dropping new songs on a regular basis again? We've seen the full range of answers in this column. Sometimes it's years, sometimes it's a matter of months. Gio Petrella, who released the full-length Sick Sad World last fall, got back in the game immediately in January with Shattered Pieces and is now back with a string of new, shorter, genre-blending singles this spring, Reinforcements, Carrying Water, and Reset. The first, Reinforcements, came on March 20th and begins with a mosaic of major key samples and oohs cut together through a camcorder haze, then takes some wild twists and turns through a maze of different sounds. Call 'em in, need reinforcements to you again. But I'll admit whatever it takes for you to win, Petrella sings, and fitting with the title, a marching drumbeat begins to play as he repeats the line, punctuated by cannon fire. Yeah, you always act up. That's how you always need backup. You can knock me down, but I always get backup. 'Cause these marble floors are cold and your blush is getting old. They're just reaping what they sow, 'cause they do what you were told, he sings. There's some fun, choppy genre mixing where a trap drum gives way to a happy acoustic guitar, then electronic beeps as the bridge hits. What are you going to say now, coming back round in pain now? Can't be out here playing round. You still acting the same now. So how the blank am I supposed to lay down, he asks, as every aspect of the production, the guitars, the beeps, all of the many drums, all reunites again underneath the call 'em in hook. There's a guitar riff reminiscent of Sam Ronson's Built This Way at the beginning of Carrying Water, released April 1st alongside a choir of Petrellas asking, why should I, over and over, and then the full soaring early nostalgia sound of the tracks crashing in. Why should I bother if you're carrying water for people that don't care about you at all? You think they really give a blank about you? I think they got enough without you. You must feel it, thinking there's something about you. You don't really make it tough to doubt you. They're so damn glad to watch you sit that fence, but I just can't stand by, he sings. Why should I bother? Chorus returns with a guitar joyfully wailing through a bunch of pedals. How can I have faith? Don't tell me that it's fine. You should count your days. Don't step out of line. This is definitely one of those songs that places Sunny production right next to downer lyrics. In this case, about watching a friend fall under the spell of a new and colder social scene, and those huge multi-tracked harmonies manage to override the predicament in the actual lyrics. The short, Reset, released April 20th, comes in at just a minute and a half and opens with fuzzy, overdriven synths joining right in with the current 2020s EDM and techno revival. I need a reset. Just got your feet wet. You can't live in a world without regret. You need to slow down, Petrella sings. You want to feel again? I know it kills you. I know the real you. Who knows if life will go on? The last 20 seconds of the track chops all of those lyrics together into one multi-voiced melody. And at the very end, the words, the real you, echo out into empty space. Reinforcements, Carrying Water, and Reset are available on music streaming services. And finally, Whimsical Wanderings at Bolton Center Trail. Some days can manifest a continuum of mysteries, a place where enchantment, wonder, and science meet. It was such a day when on a warm late morning, I stopped by the exhibit Renaissance Science, Magic and Medicine in Harry Potter's World, before it wrapped up May 8th at the Bigelow Free Public Library in Clinton. With images of basilisks, irascible owls, and other fantastical creatures on my mind, I stopped afterward at the Bolton Center Trail, part of the town's trail network, under the auspices of the Bolton Conservation Trust. It's a place where woodlands offer shade along walking trails, which feature folkloric delights such as a forest fairy potions nook and a dragon's lair, and a circular nest built of large branches and twigs in which rocks lay, or perhaps actual dragon's eggs. We'll come back in a few weeks and check the progress. Amenities also include a fitness trail with several stations and information boxes with instructions for different stretches. Stretches are key, in fact, and essential for hiking and trail walking to increase dexterity and mobility and prevent injury. The Bolton Center Trail comprises 79 acres, just shy of 3 miles of trails. The amenities are the shared responsibilities of town agencies, along with the Bolton Conservation Trust. So if you're in the area, stop by, unwind with the spirits, and perhaps leave some magic you bring with you. You have been listening to a reading of Worcester Magazine, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm Catherine Thornton, reading with Julie Standrovich. Thank you for listening.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.